You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Добрый вечер, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, friends and colleagues. I'm very happy to welcome all of you here to the Carnegie Moscow Center, most of you back to the Carnegie Moscow Center. Before I go any further, I would like to invite those who have decided to sit a bit further away to come a bit closer. There is still some room around the table. There's not going to be a presentation, so you don't have to worry about whether you can see the screen. We are very fortunate this evening to have a distinguished, if not to say eminent, guest in from the United States. He does not need an introduction to many of you, but nonetheless, Robert Blackwell is Henry Kissinger Senior Fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Blackwell joined the United States Foreign Service in 1976, if I have that, or 67, I'm sorry, if I have that right. His career included postings in Nairobi, in London, and in Tel Aviv, as well, of course, as in Washington. Was on the faculty of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard from 1983 to 85, and then again from 87 to 2001, when he was appointed ambassador to India, and then deputy director, deputy national security advisor for strategic planning up in 2003. The topic of our, at that point, and again, as I said before, now he is on the faculty of the Council on Foreign Relations. Topic of our conversation this evening is the future of Afghanistan and Obama's foreign policy. In our initial draft of the invitation that didn't go out, there was a parenthetical, which is after the demise of Osama bin Laden, but even if that's not on paper, we all understand that to be a factor affecting developments now and moving forward in that part of the world. So without further ado, I'd like to hand the floor over to Robert Blackwell. We'll have a presentation of about 20 minutes and then open it up as usual, first for questions and answers, and then for more of a free-flowing discussion. Just to note, I don't know whether we have any press in the room, but just in case we do, this conversation is on Chatham House rules, so if there is anything that you do want to write about journalistically, academically, or otherwise, please do approach Mr. Blackwell after the end of the event to check whether or not that would be appropriate. Thank you.
Good late afternoon. I'm impressed that on Friday afternoon you came, and I think it demonstrates the importance you see in the future of Afghanistan. What I would like to do, I'm not going to talk about the rest of Obama foreign policy, although I'm happy to do that in the question answer period or comments. I'm going to stick to Afghanistan for about 15 or 20 minutes. And what I want to leave you with is the question of what should we all want for the future of Afghanistan, and how do we hope to get it? And I will say, and I've spent the day seeing the senior leadership of the Russian government, that both Russia and the United States want, at a minimum, for Afghanistan, two things. One, stability, the end of war and violence. And two, no export of jihadi terrorism or of mass illegal drugs. And I think the United States, but you correct me when we have a chance to talk about this, and Russia agree on that. And then the question is, Well, if they agree on that, what's the strategy to accomplish that? And what I'm going to suggest to you today is a strategy to accomplish that. I once had a wonderful, when I was on the Harvard faculty, a wonderful colleague who said, in the late afternoon when you give a presentation, you should tell the audience what you're going to tell them, then you should tell them, and then you should tell them what you told them. So which is probably not very wrong, and I'd be the same way if I were out there. Let me tell you what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you that the current U.S. NATO strategy toward Afghanistan is going to fail. And I'm going to explain to you why I believe it is going to fail. And then I'm going to propose what I call Plan B, which is an alternative strategy to to the current strategy. And I'm going to invite you to comment on it, criticize it, ask questions about it. And I hope especially, obviously, with a Russian optic, sort of how do the Russians see this. So first, the current policy, the counterinsurgency policy. It involves spending billions of dollars. This calendar year, the United States is probably going to spend something approaching $120 billion connected to Afghanistan, suffering hundreds of U.S. deaths. Last year, 500 Americans were killed in the battlefields of Afghanistan. To prevent, in the most central way to put it, the Afghan Taliban from controlling the Pashtun homeland, which, as you know, is in the south and east part of the country, and where most of the violence occurs, and where most of the enemy is. So we spend that $120 billion to prevent the Pashtun homeland from being controlled by the Taliban. In my judgment, that is a vast amount of American blood and treasure, which is not justified by the payoff. And I'll try to tell you why. Well, why is the strategy going to fail? And I'm just going to do this in one-liners, although I'm happy to talk about it at length. First of all, the United States is not going to defeat the Taliban militarily. It's impossible. There are now about 150,000 foreign troops in Afghanistan, including 100,000 Americans. This is about, the 150,000 is about 30,000 more troops than the Soviet Union had in Afghanistan at the height of its involvement. And if you do the counterinsurgency numbers, our 150,000 is probably about half of what it would take to pacify the entire country. Counterinsurgency experts think 300,000 to 350,000 troops would be required to pacify the country, which you can see now why the Soviets were not able to do it, much less than half that, and why we're not going to be able to do it either. So the first reason is we're not going to defeat the Taliban militarily. Second, counterinsurgency depends on the quality of governance that's occurring in the country. And the quality of governance from President Karzai's government is terrible. It's deeply corrupt, and it doesn't, for most Afghans, provide the basic requirement of government, which is security and services. And that's not going to change. So one, we won't defeat the Taliban, and two, President Karzai's government isn't going to get any better. Three, the Afghan National Army will not be able to hold its own to deal with the Taliban in a major combat role for many, many years. maybe a decade, if then. And before that, if left on its own, the Afghan National Army will be defeated by the Taliban pretty rapidly. So that's number three. Number four is, of course, the Pakistan sanctuary. And as you know, the Afghan Taliban come back and forth across the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan and stay in Pakistan safely. They get trained there. They withdraw from the battle there. And they are, for the most part, safe from American attack. As the United States has found before, it is virtually impossible to defeat an insurgency if they have a sanctuary next door. We found that in Vietnam, but others have found it other places. And the last reason the strategy is going to fail is because the American people have turned against the war. The polling is about 70% or so are now against the war and would like the United States to withdraw completely from Afghanistan. So the American people are not going to give the administration a decade or more at the current levels of expenditure and deaths to see if this strategy will work. So the strategy is going to fail, in my judgment. So what do we do instead? And this is the second half of my presentation. And I think that my basic proposition is that we should devote less resources, and suffer fewer casualties. Now, how would we do that? And my own policy option, is to stop fighting in the Pashtun homeland, which, as I said before, where most of our casualties take place and where most of our money is spent. Because the price of fighting there, $120 billion a year, 500 to 700 American deaths, is far too high to continue to pay. So what I propose is that over the next year or so, the United States and the few allies that are actually in the Pashtun homeland, there are only a few, withdraw from that part of Afghanistan. Now, when that happens, the Taliban is going to very quickly control that region, the Afghan Taliban, and they will kill those Pashtun who seek to resist them. And so within a few months, the Pashtun homeland will be controlled by the Afghan Taliban. That's regrettable, for sure, after a 10-year American investment. But as I said, to keep that from happening is far too expensive for the United States. So what my policy prescription is for the United States and its allies to withdraw out of the Pashtun homeland to the other 60% of Afghanistan and defend that. And for those of you who are familiar with this, you know that means the North and the West. And to keep in the North and the West part of Afghanistan, including Kabul, a long-term American military presence for at least the next decade. So there's not an American withdrawal in 2014, as is currently planned by the American administration. That American force of 30,000 to 40,000 troops would be mostly Air Force and Special Forces, and they would stop the Taliban from conquering the rest of the country in cooperation with the Afghan National Army and the other ethnic groups, especially the Tajiks and the Uzbeks and the Hazaras. And I believe myself that this is possible. Now, so you would have a situation in which the Afghan Taliban control the south and the east, and the Americans and the Iraqi Afghan government and those other countries that were willing to help control the north and the west. Now, of course, this is deeply disappointing, but I think it's better than the other options available, and let me just say what I think those are very quickly. Well, one is to continue the current strategy. I've told you what I think about that, but let me just give you these numbers. The United States now has 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. According to the public testimony of the CIA, there are between 50 and 100 al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. If you think about it, that's 1,000 American troops for each al-Qaeda fighter. Now, to remind you, the United States went to Afghanistan in 2001 not to overthrow the Taliban. It went there to destroy al-Qaeda. And in that, it has largely succeeded. But along the path, it lost its way, so that now it doesn't fight al-Qaeda, it fights the Afghan Taliban. And let me give you another fact. The Afghan Taliban, to this day, has mounted no terrorist operation outside Afghanistan. Not one. And remember, we went to Afghanistan to prevent, after 9/11, the export of terrorism to the United States homeland. Well, the Afghan Taliban have never perpetrated a terrorist attack outside Afghanistan. So, option one is to continue to spend this enormous amount of money to destroy these few dozen al-Qaeda. Another option, which is popular, and in fact increasingly popular in the United States, not yet a majority, is a total American military withdrawal from Afghanistan in the next year or two. So this option says this is a mess, it's not going to get better, and the United States should totally withdraw. I'm against that, as I'm against the first option, because I believe that if we withdraw, very quickly the Afghan Taliban will start north and west. There'll be a major resumption of the civil war, but I think that will be brief, and you will have, again, the Taliban controlling all of Afghanistan. That would bring Afghanistan's neighbors into the fighting. Russians don't need to be told what that would mean. I think they don't need to be told what that would mean with respect to bringing Islamic jihadism to your southern Central Asian region. And then there's the drug issue as well. So I think that a total American withdrawal is also a very bad idea, as opposed to the partial withdrawal that I suggested earlier. The third option, which is very popular now in the U.S., people talk about, is negotiating with the Taliban an outcome that protects American interests. I think that's impossible. The Afghan Taliban's objective is to conquer all of Afghanistan and to restore the kind of regime that was there before 2001. I don't think that they are interested in a negotiation other than to weaken the will of those who are negotiating with them. And so I don't believe that the negotiation will succeed. So finally, a last problem with this, and this is one, and those of you who were in the military know this more than others. If the president were to follow my advice and have this withdrawal from the Pashtun homeland, imagine a family, an American family, who lost their son in those valleys and mountains, and ask, well, what was that for? And of course, thousands and thousands and thousands of Russian families must have asked that after the Soviet withdrawal from Afghanistan, that their precious loved one died, and now there's an evacuation. He died defending ground that now has been given over to the enemy. That is certainly not an easy argument for the president to make, our president to make, but I think that it's painful as it would be, it's necessary to make it because more and more Americans will die there within, I think, the same result. That is to say, it's only a matter of time before we do withdraw, at least from the Pashtun homeland. So, what do I think historians will say about this? My own judgment, for what it's worth, is that they will ask, how in the world did the United States get into a situation in which it went 10,000 miles into a medieval society with no natural resources of any kind anytime soon, a society hostile to foreign intervention for millennia? How in the world did the United States decide to fight there as opposed to all those many other places where American vital national interests are engaged? Or to put it differently, how did the Americans decide this place, this Afghanistan, was a place worth dying for? Which, of course, is the primary constitutional obligation of the American president. I think that historians will have a hard time figuring out this, why the United States took those steps. And in addition to your comments, which I look forward to hearing, about other things, I really would like to hear you on the question of a prolonged American military deployment in Afghanistan in order to forestall the victory of jihadi fanatics. Do you think that's a good idea? Would you rather the Americans left and you'll take your chances with the new Taliban conquest of the country? I'm very interested in what you think about that. So, Chairman, with that, and I think I stuck to my 20 minutes, I'll stop and I look forward to the questions and the comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we collect questions in batches?
Okay, you're in charge. I want to say one other thing, which is I'm extremely grateful to this gentleman here, and I think there's one back there. I'm from Southern California, and I could hardly find a tie before I came here. So whenever I see one person in an audience without a tie, I take off my tie. It doesn't take two, it doesn't take five, one. So I'm taking off my tie. I invite anyone else who wants to be so reckless to do the same thing. Okay.
Please. Dr. Vladimir Sotnik, the Institute of Oriental Studies, Russian Academy of Sciences. Robert, I heard from the sources close to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow that the total number of the U.S. troops which the United States are going to withdraw in the near future is only 5,000. How would you comment on that?
Okay, I think I'll do these quickly. The answer is nobody knows. That's the real answer. The president hasn't decided. More than that, General Petraeus hasn't even made his recommendation yet. so nobody knows. My guess is that it'll be higher, somewhat higher. So I'll pick the number, and you can all remember. If I get the number right, remember who said it. If I get the number wrong, forget who said it or think this gentleman here said it. My guess is 20,000 or so. I don't think that the president will tell, and now remember, this is not for attribution, so none of you are going to run out and say Blackwell said this. I think the president will not want to tell the country that out of 100,000 he's taking 5,000 out. It'll be larger. On the other hand, I don't think it'll be 50, because I think that will go against the U.S. military's recommendation. So if I had to guess, about 20 or so, I think. And I think, and again, you military men will understand this, I think what General Petraeus and his colleagues will then be told is make that 20,000 reduction out of the tail and not out of the teeth. In other words, out of the non-combat forces and not out of the combat forces. My guess is about 20,000.
Thank you very much. So if you would convince to the World Economy and International Relations for Africa, I would first like to ask you about some sort of contradiction that I see between the arguments that you put behind each of the future scenarios for Afghanistan.
Good.
You said that we have a problem with insurgents having a sanctuary nearby. With your proposition, you actually are about to enlarge this sanctuary. You give these 40% of Afghan territory to Taliban, and they will just feel relaxed in this territory and will enlarge their activities. Then, when you speak about a possibility of a total withdrawal from Afghanistan, you say that this will pose a threat of jihadism going to Central Asia. In the same time, you believe that if we leave only the Pashtun lands under the Taliban, there will not be interventionists. They will not go outside this territory. So why? I believe that they will use this opportunity to be more aggressive outside, or at least on the whole territory of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I think that's two. Let me answer those two, because I think they're very good. And of course, I could have addressed them, but I wanted to stay in. But they're absolutely central questions. The first question has to do with what's sometimes called Pashtunistan, is if you allow the Afghan Pashtuns to have that area, won't they ally with the Afghan Pashtuns across the way? And don't you have a larger problem than you had before? So that's the question. Well, here's my answer to that, which is perhaps, but as I said before, that's not a problem that necessarily affects America. And by the way, I make no apologies for this. My preoccupation is the United States. I'm not fashioning a strategy for Afghanistan or Russia or Pakistan. But I would point out this, that on that score, the Pakistan Army today is the biggest reason that area is expanding, because of their intervention across the line into Pashtun Afghanistan. So this is regrettable, but I don't think it necessarily will affect U.S. interests if that's a bigger area. The second thing, and I didn't have a chance to say this, but I will say it now, because you're absolutely right. If you had to guess, you would guess that the Afghan Taliban will not be satisfied with the Pashtun area, but will be moved north and west. And I think that's very likely. And we will kill them when they do. And let me just say, just to remind you, don't roll your eyes. It's impolite. It's impolite, and I promise not to roll mine when you say something. Okay? Because you ought to at least roll your eyes after you hear my argument, not before, okay? Here is why I say that. We now have technology that, as you know, through the drones, can attack in very specific ways targets associated with the Taliban leadership. Now, today, they're in those mountains, and it's not so easy to find them, and when we do, we try to kill them. But imagine this. Imagine that what we say to this new government, because there would be quickly a government in this Pashtun area, we say to them, if you wish to come out of your caves and actually have a government here, and what does that mean? That means mayors and religious figures and school. You have to not attack north and west, because if you do that, none of you will be safe. And imagine trying to drive not a road up in those mountains where you're sleeping in the cave every night, but imagine you're sleeping in Kandahar. Now, and then we have the special forces. I can't guarantee this will be a deterrent, to use the technical phrase, but what I can guarantee is if they do that, many of them will die. And then we'll see. We'll see. But your very good questions lead me to say the following. I've worked four times at the White House, four different times. And one, some of you know this, if you're confronting policy challenges, you never have a perfect policy that you can recommend. And there's always problems. And you pointed out, I think, very thoughtfully, two of the problems. But I think even with those problems, it's better than our current policy. And that's what the argument will be about. And I have close friends who disagree with that, partly for the reasons you articulated. But in my judgment, this isn't a perfect policy that I'm recommending. It's just the best one I can think of, less than $120 billion a year. That's a lot of money. I'll give you just one example of this. We had I'll give you two examples, just to give you a sense of what $120 billion is. We had a very distinguished commission, I don't know if there are any naval officers, former naval officers in the audience, recently, who said the American Navy is too small, okay, and should, because of the challenges in the Pacific in particular, have 50 more ships, okay, 50 more ships. What's the cost of that? About $120 billion. So you can spend this money in other ways. And I'll give you the second example, which is we felt very good, we Americans, and some of you don't follow this closely enough, but we felt very good when we were able to cut, finally, the Congress agreed, our budget. We finally, terrible fights, we finally cut our budget. You know how much we cut our budget? About $110 billion. So this is real money we're talking about that can be spent in other places. Those are my two arguments. For Pashtunistan's a problem, for sure, but I think it's more of a problem for the Pakistanis, and if they really thought it was going to be a problem, they'd end their support for the sanctuaries in their own country, the Pakistan military. And second, I believe that there's a substantial chance we could deter the Pashtun Taliban from trying to move north and west, through technology that was not available in 2001. But I think very good questions. I think both of them. Absolutely central. Could you wait for the mic here? The microphone is coming.
Okay. Alexander Polishuk from the Institute of Oriental Studies of Academy of Science of Russia. You know, well, does your idea about staying at the north, at the western parts of the country, apply the possibility of creating a new country, named, well, I don't know, well, Khorasan or something like this? Is it possible to have a boundary, as you said, more or less protected between Pashtun areas and other parts of Afghanistan? Thank you very much.
It could happen. It's the same question in another way, which is, could there be a new country that would grow up from the southern and eastern parts of Afghanistan and from the northern and western parts of Pakistan? That might happen, a new Pashtun. There are 40 million of these people. We have countries in the United Nations that have 1,500 people in them. So it could happen. But what I'm saying is it worth to prevent that? Which of you, if you want to run for Congress in the United States, would like to go to your constituency and say it's worth $120 billion a year to prevent this from happening? And I don't think so. I've been there. I was the presidential envoy to Afghanistan in the Bush administration. And don't need to tell Russians, this is a pretty inhospitable place, if I may put it like that. There's a whole generation of Russians who came back who know that much better. So I don't think it's worth it. Let me contrast this one last point, but just to the United States just announced within the last week that it had looked everywhere for money for Egypt, economic assistance, not military, after this tsunami that surprised us all, Arab Spring or whatever you wish to call it in Russian. So they looked everywhere for money. How much money did they find? Well, they looked and they looked and they looked, and they may have found $1 billion. $1 billion. That's 3 days in Afghanistan. How many of you think Afghanistan is as important as Egypt in the future of the international system? I doubt it. So anyway, I'll end that answer there.
Please.
I'm Peter Topichkan from the Carnegie Moscow Center. Ambassador Blekel, in your presentation, in your plan B, you didn't mention neighbor states of Afghanistan, and you didn't mention about India, Iran, Central Asian republics. Does it mean that you don't believe in the regional approach to Afghanistan problem? Is it true? And do you see any significant role of neighbor states, and especially of India, where you served?
See, this is time.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is the problem of promising you're going to make a 20-minute presentation instead of a 40-minute. My plan B will not work without the cooperation of the neighbors. So regional diplomacy is absolutely critical in my plan. And let me just go through them one by one, the most important ones. There's Pakistan, which hates my plan B because it stopped, and this is my judgment, because it stops the Pakistan military from supporting the Afghan Taliban until they again control all of Afghanistan. So the Pakistanis don't like it. The Indians are not crazy about it. They would like the United States to continue fighting there for the foreseeable future. But it's a better outcome than the total conquering of Afghanistan by the Taliban. You can tell me what the Russians think. The big problem for us is Iran. And it's a problem, but not so much because of Afghanistan, but because of the terrible relationship between the United States and Iran about other issues. I don't know whether the Iranians would cooperate in what I'm describing. We know before that the Iranians did not want the Afghan Taliban to conquer all of those Sunnis, to conquer the Shia Hazaras. We know that in the western part of Afghanistan. But I don't know what their calculations would be now between A, the Afghan Taliban conquering all of Afghanistan, or B, having the American military in Afghanistan for a very long time. I don't know how they would calculate it. But what I would like is to have a conversation with them about it. Because it won't work. The Iranians now, at least to some degree, are supporting the Afghan Taliban, which they've never done before, but they are doing it now in order to weaken the Americans. I don't know if there were private conversations with the Iranians how they would come out on this. And then there's, as I say, Russia is an absolutely crucial part of this. Because if Russia were to say, to have an official position, we want the Americans to leave, my guess is that most of the Central Asian states would then adopt that position, either out of conviction or wanting to stay close to Russia or whatever. And again, only a regional, so this only can occur within a regional solution. I'll say one last thing, which is, again, since we're not on the record here and nobody's going to quote me, I am bewildered why the American administration has not worked harder on a regional solution. I just don't understand it. I can understand their hesitancy in negotiating with the Taliban because the Taliban will interpret this as American weakness, that we need to negotiate with them because we can't win on the battlefield. But why aren't we engaged in diplomacy with the neighbors in a much more intense way than we are, including, of course, Russia? I don't mean it doesn't get discussed, but the Obama administration has envoys for everything you can imagine, including walking your dog at night. There's an envoy for walking your dog at night. That was supposed to be a joke. But anyway, I don't know why they don't have an envoy for regional diplomacy in Afghanistan. We have an envoy for Southwest Asia, but that person basically does only Afghanistan and Pakistan. I'm talking about somebody who's in continual discussions. Now, I go back to the Iranians. Maybe they won't talk to us. And if they don't talk to us, then I would come to Moscow and I would say to our Russian friends, will you pass this message to them on our behalf? And maybe we'd have to use the Russians as an intermediary if the Iranians won't talk to us. But I believe the Iranians do not want the Sunni Taliban jihadis to control Afghanistan for obvious reasons. So maybe one could draw them in too. But I guess I should tie the two together. Time is running out because if you wake up and you're an Afghan Taliban, you wonder how long the Americans can last. And if you are the countries around Afghanistan, you are already hedging your bets for American withdrawal. You know what the Taliban say about the Americans in Afghanistan? They have the watches and we have the time. And so I would launch this regional diplomacy urgently in the way that you obviously favor, and so do I. But I'm not in my fifth time at the White House, so I'm not likely to have all that much influence. But that was good.
Viktor Kuvaldin, Gorbachev Foundation and Moscow State University. First of all, thank you very much, Mr. Blackwell, for so open and straight talk about this problem. I have two questions for you. First, why do you think that this new Afghan state, Western and northern part of the country, will be viable without Pashtun, who historically kept the country together? Why do you think it will be not new version of failed state? And my second question, have you analyzed the experience of Najibullah government in 1991, this means after withdrawal of Soviet troops. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good. This is very. I'm with a bunch of experts, clearly, which is good for me. First, is this northwestern segment of Afghanistan viable? Well, the answer is no. Without massive Western assistance, including American. But it's not viable. The country itself in a war is not viable either. And one of the things that I just want to stress here, I hope it's not too micro, but here's what happens in the Pashtun homeland today. An American Marine patrol goes out, okay? And they go past a village, and they are attacked. Two of them are killed. they fight off the Taliban, who withdraws into the mountains the way they do. The next day, the leadership of this Marine unit goes to the elders, the Pashtun elders, and with whom say they have a good relationship of the village, and they say, why didn't you warn us? And the Pashtun elders say, because, either they say, they think, because we think you're foreign occupiers and we want to, you to leave, but sometimes they say, because those guys who came down here out of the mountains will be here next year and you won't, right? And so we get almost no human intelligence of any consequence out of the people who live in the Pashtun homeland. That is not true in the North and West. And you all were supporters when we made the terrible mistake of forgetting Afghanistan after the Soviet withdrawal. You all were supporters of the Northern Alliance, of course, and you kept that Tajik, Uzbek, Hazara alliance together, or we wouldn't have had, we Americans wouldn't have had an army to go to Kabul in 2001 to liberate it. So I think with your assistance, with the other neighbors' assistance, with massive economic assistance, I'm not saying that this is going to turn into Switzerland, but I do think that it will help all of us, control those borders against the terrible drug traffic and against jihadi fanaticism, and I think the local people up there will be our partners in that, as they have been, as they were more for you all in the past. So that's what I think. Najibullah, I have looked at that, and Americans don't remember that strategy and how long Najibullah held off after you all left. But I think the difference is that you left. And under my proposition, we don't leave. And I think if we leave, then the same thing's going to happen as when you left. And I'll tell you again off the record here, I was recently talking to a senior Afghan, I won't say who, of course, and I said, if the Americans were to leave, when would the first pickup truck, Taliban pickup truck, drive into Kabul? And this senior Afghan said, a week. Because the Afghan National Army, he said, here's what would happen without the Americans. When the Tajiks saw the Taliban coming, here's what they would do. Tajik members of the Afghan National Army. They would get their firearm, their rifle, whatever they can take. They would get in their jeep, and they would go to their home village to protect their home village, not stay in Kabul to protect Kabul. And of course, but anyway, I try to vivify this to say what will happen if we leave entirely, and I think it wouldn't be different than what happened when you left entirely, except it would be faster than the Najibullah period. But I think all these are very good questions, sir. This is a tough problem. This is a tough problem.
Ambassador, I found only one weak argument in your brilliant presentation, and if I were your citizen, I would support your proposal with my both hands raised. And this weak argument is that the United States came to Afghanistan to fight al-Qaeda. This is half of the truth. The second half is that Taliban invited al-Qaeda to the territory, and as we all invited al-Qaeda to their territory and did not cooperate with the rest of the world against al-Qaeda. So, in fact, United States came to Afghanistan to fight Taliban, to fight al-Qaeda.
Let me tell you why that isn't true, and the record is not ambiguous about this. I want to remind you, what was the ultimatum that was given to the Taliban government before the United States said, we are now going to overthrow you? It was expel al-Qaeda. Yeah. It was not end the governance of Afghanistan. And I can assure you that if they made an enormous mistake, I think maybe even They may think so now. If they had expelled Al-Qaeda, we would have never invaded the country. Never.
Well, that's
we did
exactly
not. And I think the historical record, which is all now is made public, is absolutely clear on this. The United States, when it got there, had no interest in a long-term occupation of Afghanistan. And it was only after we lost them at Tora Bora, we can get into why that happened, because mm-hmm. of our incompetence, and they went across the border, that we stayed behind. We did not. But I think your question implies, which is a good question, is how is it that we slipped from killing Al-Qaeda, which ran across the border into Pakistan, and found ourselves over time fighting the Afghan Taliban? And that is, I was in the administration for part of this period, and it remains kind of mysterious to me how it happened. I could try to explain it, but anyway. But we didn't want to be there. We wanted to kill Osama bin Laden, destroy Al-Qaeda, and leave. Well, we didn't manage that for sure 10 years later.
Well, but in fact, what I was saying, that Taliban did not want to expel Osama.
Right.
And they invited Osama and Al-Qaeda. So that means that as soon as they have the Pashtunistan, they will probably invite someone like him, or which is a very high possibility. But I would like to explain why I support your proposal.
Let me do that one, which is, no, but it's important, I think, for the quality of the conversation. Because another question which arises, which is very good, well, won't this again turn into what it was before, right? And here's the reason it won't. And again, I have to give you some detail. Today, there were about 400 Al-Qaeda fighters in Pakistan and Afghanistan combined. There are more Afghan Al-Qaeda fighters in Yemen than there are in Afghanistan. By the way, we don't have 100,000 troops in Yemen, notice. Where are they? They are within about a 50-mile belt on two sides of the border. Okay? These are very bad people who are planning to blow us up. But what difference does it make to us as we target them, whether they're in this cave on that side of the border or on this cave on this side of the border? Secondly, since 2001, and you know this, Alexander, since 2001, Al-Qaeda has dispersed. Al-Qaeda has dispersed, and it's all, well, it's, I can name 10 countries it's in, and if they were to try to come back, why was Osama bin Laden able to create a military base in Pashtunistan, which looked like an American military base, because we didn't attack it? Because we will, if they come back and try to recreate their infrastructure, we'll kill them. Because we can target them easily, the first bulldozer or whatever they have that tries to make a facility, we'll kill them. So I think that particular argument that, well, it's going to come, it'll be like before, is not, it doesn't seem to me, a powerful or realistic argument. But then I shouldn't have, never, listen, this is, never interrupt someone who is saying, I want to tell you why I support you. So, off you
go. Anyway, I'm still going to support you just for one reason, because what I see in your proposal is the, no strategy, but tactic, which was somehow ascribed to Mr. Stalin, who, as some historians say, he invited Hitler to go deep into the Russian territory and then defeated Germany. In this case, I see that you are in a stalemate right now because you cannot fight Taliban on the Pakistani territory.
Right.
So you need them. You need them on the open space. You want them. You invite them to Pashtunistan, and then you can fight them. Well, that if, I'm not quite sure that this is exactly the sense of your proposal, but I see it as a military retired military person. And from this point of view, I see that this is the only way how you can fight them, if not decisively, but in an efficient way. again, coming back to our arguments on Al Qaeda and Taliban, if Taliban is not supporting terrorists, then why don't United States withdraw totally? They are efficient as a government. They will occupy the whole of Afghanistan. They will rule there. And if we are sure that they will not look behind the borders, if they don't look for supporting terrorism in other areas, why should we be bothered about this kind of rule in the medieval state, as we say it? So we probably have some reservations in our mind about the nature of Taliban. And we still remember that what was Taliban, how we still remember that Taliban was threatening the borders of our Central Asian neighbors, former Soviet republics. So we still have some reservations about the nature of the regime of Taliban. And I think that your proposal it's not just political, it's military. It's military tactics, which is absolutely wise, and as I see it right now, it's probably the only option you have right now. Thank you.
On the issue of the nature of the Taliban, we agree on that. But let me be clear what I said again. What I said was that the Taliban now has conducted no terrorist operations against the United States or its allies outside of Afghanistan. Now, what about, well, then does that mean that if they control the whole country, they would only be preoccupied with the internal? And the answer is absolutely not. They would export their revolution. But I believe where that revolution gets exported to is not to New York or Chicago. It gets exported toward you. And so we agree on that. And I don't want them to be up against that border so that they can build their logistical support systems and all the rest, as they did before, going deep into Central Asia. So, but I also think it's bad for us because I can't be absolutely certain they wouldn't turn on us, and I want to deny them that opportunity. The other thing is the military point you make, and I just want to agree with it and say this again. Think of this. They're now in these caves. And we try to target them, and we have some success, and they go out of the cave and get in a van, and sometimes we can find them and kill them through our advanced technology. But imagine that they now do control Kandahar, because under my proposal, they control Kandahar. Well, they actually have to now manage Kandahar. So they got to have a mayor, they got to have a police chief. Imagine if this mayor is supporting terrorism in Afghanistan outside that envelope. Well, we're going to kill him unless he tries to be mayor of Kandahar from the mountains up in some cave someplace. And what I would hope is that deterrent, basically what the message to them is, you can run your little Islamic Jihad state if you want to in this small area, and we're not going to attack you. But if we get information that either you're inviting Al-Qaeda back in or you're now trying to breach your little parliament, then the sky will be dark with drones. And just to say, we have now three drone factories in the United States that are 24 hours a day. And this is a different situation than before because we don't have to die in going to get them. And our intelligence doesn't depend on human intelligence, especially if the guy is the mayor. And if in those circumstances, if you were the mayor or the police chief from Kandahar, you couldn't be sure every time you woke up in the morning and went out to be police chief that you'd come home that night. That could be a deterrent. I don't know whether it would be a deterrent. Maybe they're willing to have four police chiefs in 6 months. But at least I'd hope it would be. But I want to build on what you said by saying this. I don't think this is a perfect idea. it's just the best one I can think of in the current situation. And let me tell you, I spent 14 years as a Harvard professor. Here's the difference between Harvard professors who know about these subjects and practitioners. And so a lot of you know this. Harvard professors get to decide, well, here's what I think today. The Americans have never should have gone into Afghanistan. They shouldn't have lost Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and Tora Bora and so forth. And then they can argue that. Policymakers come into office, and the Obama administration inherited a terrible mess in Afghanistan, and they're trying to deal with it. I think they're making a mistake, but my heart goes out to them with a mess thing. So what I am is, it is today. It's not 2001, it's not 2005, it's not Najibullah, it is today. What's the best thing to do today? And that's what I'm trying to do. And if anybody else has got a... I tried to go over the main alternatives. Total withdrawal, stay the course, negotiate with the Taliban. I think all three of those will fail.
I'm Taka Sadahiro, Moscow correspondent with the Yomiuri Shimbun and ex-Washington correspondent.
Good. And that is a great newspaper.
Okay. And... now, next U.S. president is 17 months to go, and I'm curious to know how important or divisive this Afghan policy will be. And is there any indication the GOP will take your position of the second plan B, let me say partial withdrawal, or as E-Day approaches, Obama may change the policy?
Well, this is along the lines of the 5,000 troop withdrawal. Nobody knows. But again, off the record, I'll tell you my best guess. Nobody knows. Here's my best guess. First of all, as I think most of you know, the strongest supporters of the current U.S. policy in Afghanistan are the Republicans, not the Democrats. He has a lot more support in the Republican Party than in the Democratic Party. I think what will happen is that, I'll try to do this in just two sentences. There'll be a 20,000-person withdrawal in early July, starting, take 6 months. There'll be another one net in a year, and the strategy won't change, basically, until we have the next American president. Because I think that's a safer course for him politically than either keeping the total number more or less where it is, the 5,000 option, or a much bigger withdrawal. So I think that's where he'll be. But there's one other thing to tell you all who don't follow it so closely. I mentioned before that roughly 70% of the American people have turned against the war. For good reason, as you can tell in my judgment, but they have. But that doesn't measure the intensity of how they feel about it. And they have no intensity about it. If you ask the American people, name the 10 things that you most are concerned about as you think of how you'll vote, Afghanistan doesn't appear. As you'd guess, number one is the U.S. economy, number two is the U.S. economy, number three is the U.S., and so forth. So although they're against it, and I'll tell you something that's quite sad as American to have to say. They don't feel intensely about it. Now, why don't they? Well, why don't they feel it? And the reason is that our political elite and most middle-class Americans know no one who has died in Afghanistan. Because our forces come from the inner city. It's where they always come from the American South, from farms and so forth, and they don't. They didn't go to Harvard. They didn't go to Yale. A lot of them didn't go to university at all. And so, unlike World War II, where, like here, everybody went and everybody knew people, including usually in their own family, who died. If I said to a senator, and I would embarrass him, of the 100 senators, do you know the family? I don't mean somebody you have in your outer office who comes in and you say, did you watch anybody grow up who died in Afghanistan? They don't know. So this takes the pressure off the politicians. And it's not just the politicians. It's the middle class. They don't know anybody who died. And so that protects, back to your question, the president. I think so that's my guess, 20 and 20. That means we'll have 60 to 70,000 troops in Afghanistan on the day of the presidential election next year is my best guess. But then the question is, what then? Because what if President Obama is reelected? What then? And does he, then he would be safe politically in a very fast withdrawal if he wanted to do it. Or if it's a Republican who now says he wants us to stay there in the current configuration, does he still have the same view in 2 years? So I think that's when the big decisions on Afghanistan will happen. And you see, from my point of view, I regret that, because between now and then, another 1,000 Americans will die. That's somebody's brother and somebody's son, in some cases somebody's daughter and somebody's mother and somebody's father, another 1,000. And so, and I would say if it were worth it, that's part of patriotism. But I think in 5 years in Marja, if you remember that village in Helmand Province, nobody's going to remember the Americans except the ones that are dead. And maybe they'll find some part of them. That's a sad thing to say, but I believe it's true.
Please.
Kislev Danila, Senior Fellow of Scientific Research Center of Federal Service on Drug Control. I'm not going to talk about drugs, but I would like you to comment on some facts that I suppose are somehow contradictory to what you're saying. First, I believe the fact is that the Taliban is not a formed entity. It is a quite dispersed society with no common goals or any centralized structure. There are part of them who are involved in war not by their own fault. I believe it's not their fault. It is their tragedy. There are a generation that had grown up that had no peaceful period in their entire life. So the war is the only thing they could do. So we could bring them back to normal society. I believe it is one of the aim, one of the purpose in building a strong Afghan state within existing borders. And I agree with my neighbor who recognized the Pashtuns as the main force of nation building process in Afghanistan. And I believe that the mistake of Soviet Union was the disproportion in their approach to the people of Afghanistan. So we were mostly concentrated on the North people, not Pashtuns. And now you're going to do the same mistake. I believe that Pashtuns should be the leaders of nation building processes in Afghanistan. And the another fact is that there, when we are talking about inefficiency of financial of the use of financial resources in Afghanistan, we mention the corrupt Karzai government. Surely it is corrupt, but is his government is not the main actor in this field. You know that the vast majority of all the funds injected into Afghanistan are
going... Is there
going
to be a question here sometime?
Sorry, it would be.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt. Let me just say, but I thought your points are good. But yeah. You're a natural member of the Harvard faculty, and let me tell you why. In a Harvard setting like this, people say, okay, we only want questions. And everybody shakes their head. And then the first person speaks for 45 minutes giving their opinions and then says, don't you agree? Okay, let me address both your points quickly because we're running out of time here. On the first one, the issue of, well, some of the Taliban don't fight. It's fractured, the Pashtun. I agree with that. It's splintered. I agree with that. I don't believe if my plan B were implemented that the Taliban would immediately take over all of that, but I think it'd be only a matter of time. And there's a laboratory for this because it happened the last time. Here's what would happen. Let's admit you would have a village chief in one of these valleys with the mountains everywhere, and in the middle of the night, the Taliban would come in and they would kill him and kill his wife and kill his 6 children, because that's what happened the last time. And then they would go to the next village over and say, did you notice what happened to that village? And that's how long it would take. And these people wouldn't have, I believe, the means to defend themselves. That's my first point. So I think within, tragically, and I agree entirely with this generation, now we have, depends on how you count it, nearly 3 generations of young Pashtun have only known war. But the second thing I would say is about because it sounds as if what you want the United States to do is give this process enough time so this nation building emanating from the Pashtun homeland could take hold and so forth and so forth. All I say to that is, if you feel that way, send the Russian army to do it. No, I'm serious. One of the things, I was the ambassador to India, and the Indians have, my dear, dear friends, I love every one of them, all 1.3 billion of them, but they are very enthusiastic about Americans fighting, Indians fighting the last American. If you feel strongly about that, you had a terrible historical experience, you go do it. We tried to do it for 10 years, and we failed. Now, you go try to do it for another 10 years if you feel strongly about it, but don't ask us to do it for another 10 years in these circumstances, because it is, as you've all been saying, it is a stalemate. And I think we can kill a lot of the Taliban, and at least in some cases, and you obviously have studied this, if we kill one, we create 5 more fighters of his brothers and his cousins and so forth. So I don't see the end of the road here. If I did, if you could tell me, if you stick to the current counterinsurgency strategy for 4 more years, it'll be okay. I don't believe it'll be okay. I think it'll look like this, more or less. And a bunch of other Americans will die, and a bunch of other thousands of other Afghans will die, and I think it'll look pretty much like this. And I don't have time now, but I could give you a lot of data in that regard. If you study Marja, this village in the Helmand province, which you know about, in which we sent the Marines in in a very big way, a brigade of Marines. We cleared the city. We chased the Taliban away. This was, of course, 10 months ago. It was supposed to be the laboratory. Today, the Marines can't go except in patrols down the main street after dark. Today. Well, that's what it is. Can I do one more for you, which is Alexander the Great? Alexander the Great is about to cross into the area which we now know as the Pashtun homeland, okay? And he's got his Macedonian army. And he, as they did then, he calls a religious man over, and he says, he was on his way to India, I'm about to go through this area, should I do it? And the holy man said, no. By the way, he did and ran into terrible trouble, as you know, and died on the way back. But anyway, no, you shouldn't. Why not? The holy man says, bring the water bag off the camel. And what they did then was they sewed the camel's stomachs together with these enormous water bags that they then put over the top of the camel. So a couple guys bring the water bag over and set it down. And Alexander said, what's this water bag for? And the guy says, well, watch what happens. So the guy steps on the water bag. He, of course, displaces the water and says, okay, that's the village today. Now watch what happens to that village when you move to the next village. He takes one step forward, and, of course, the water comes in. I rest my case, which is whatever it is, 2,400 years old. That's what it is now. If we were willing to keep Marines in Marja for the rest of their lifetime, maybe we could have a market in Marja that functioned. Too high a price. Of
got three more questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got to have shorter answers. But so I think, again, let me say, you all do not belong in an American setting like this because you actually ask questions. So it's remarkable for an American to hear an audience that actually asks questions. It's absolutely, well, you know, you were watching. Stunning.
Let's take these three questions in a group.
Okay. Yeah, let's take them in a group. Then we can all have a glass of wine.
Ria Novosti, Nick, Shah Mahmoud. The Taliban is the symbol for Afghans. As the Al Qaeda is a symbol for the United States. We see that Americans fighting against the Pashtuns in Afghanistan, and also they stimulate the Pakistan government to fight against the Pashtun, the other side of border. In Afghanistan, there is not all the people Taliban. There is fighting the peoples. They are not Taliban. They are Pashtuns. They are fighting because they don't job, they don't have schools, they don't have hospitals, they don't have anything. And the government is full of corruption. And that what you see said that in the north, in east Afghanistan, there is not Pashtuns. No, this is not true. There is a lot of, there is too many Pashtuns. They are living there. You don't think that reconciliation is the very good way to solve the Afghan problems and to don't destroy the Pakistan and also the Afghanistan and also the South Asia, other countries.
Thank you. Over here and then over here.
Kevin Kulikov from the Moscow Defense University. I am an expert in Afghanistan and Iran, and I have been doing this job so for 35 years. And sorry, I'm sure that thank you for your brilliant presentation. Unfortunately, I didn't have an opportunity to attend.
Well, you wouldn't have thought it was brilliant if you'd been here.
Yeah, but nevertheless, but I can imagine, yeah, that's what, if you delivered it in a way, so my American colleagues, we discuss the Afghanistan problem every week, so it was the same positions, probably I can imagine what happened.
I doubt it, actually.
I thought that we reached the time when we can discuss the problem. So
we've got
okay,
6 minutes.
Okay,
two questions and then an answer.
I'll do it later, just because I don't.
We can do it when we have a drink.
Hi, Jim Brook, Voice of America, and I was in Kandahar with the New York Times 10 years ago, and I walked down the street, no problem, so things have changed. Very quickly, my question is about what should Russia be doing. Very quickly, Russia, after the United States, is the second largest magnet for migrant workers. 80% of them come from Central Asia, about 10 million people. Very poorly acculturated. There's obviously a fear here that they will transmit Islamic radicalism. I just read that last year Tajikistan closed down 1,500 mosques for extremist activity or alleged extremist activity. So I'm interested in what you think that Russia should be doing given their 150-year interest in Central Asia, and how should they be? What should their policy be?
Okay. Since the colonel yielded, he yielded to the lady in the back of the room, and then we'll wrap it up. Okay.
Natalia Zamarayeva, Institute of Oriental Studies. Is there any difference between Afghan Taliban and Pakistani Taliban? And the second question, why and what is the reason of spreading Pakistani Taliban so quickly across the country? Thank you.
So just to recap, the first question was about prospects for reconciliation and reconciliation as a strategy. The second question was about Russia, what Russia should be doing in Central Asia and the region. And the last question was a two-part about the difference between the Taliban in Afghanistan and Pakistan, if there is a difference, and about why you believe if there were a withdrawal of Pakistan, that the Taliban would be able to spread so quickly through the rest of Afghanistan.
Okay, good. On reconciliation, if I thought that that was possible, then I would have two drinks tonight and not just one. And I support it. I support it. But I don't think it's going to happen. And if it does happen, every American should be delighted that it's happening. But I believe that the forces... What? Well... And let me say, I read in the newspaper that there are quiet American discussions in Ankara and other places with Taliban representatives, and I think, and I support an effort in that respect. I just think it'll fail. And I think it'll fail because the Afghan Taliban think they're winning. And they think, too, it's a stalemate, and the time's on their side. If you go to Kabul, and somebody I think said they'd been in Kabul recently, if you go to Kabul and talk to the Tajiks about this, their idea of reconciliation to a Tajik, what he says is, this means the Taliban takes over my country again. That's what reconciliation means. So I just don't think it's going to happen. But if it were going to happen, I would salute it and hope for it. Okay, second on what should the Russians be doing, and this, I don't know,
we'll have an informal continuation of the conversation after.
That Kandahar and Helmand, when the Americans are working here, and they construct the Kandahar and Helmand, they were the only people in Afghanistan supporting the United States.
Well, let me say, if you're asking me to defend every element of American policy, I think that perhaps you've found that I'm not going to do that. Anyway, the Russians and Afghanistan. This is interesting to me because, and I don't know, you all are obviously quite informed about this, but I think most Russians don't know what I'm about to say, and hardly any Americans know. Today, and the number is just about right, 55% of all material that goes to support the war in Afghanistan comes from the northern route. 55%. And this is because of the decision of the Russian government. And it's about 2 years old now. And, of course, the Americans are extraordinarily pleased with this because it reduces its dependency on the route from Karachi. So that's the first point. And let me say... 100% of all the troops who go into Afghanistan go through Kyrgyzstan. Yeah, Maraz, right. And it's something like 5,000 a week, or maybe it's 5,000 a month, but they all go through there. Nobody goes the other way. So in that sense, Russia is making an enormous contribution to trying to keep this thing from completely falling apart. I think that the big question for the Russians is the one, and I was discussing this with Lavrov today, is the one that I began with. Can Russia, for its own reasons, tolerate a prolonged American military presence in Afghanistan or not? And that'll be something for the Russian government to decide, and whatever it decides will, I think, have a very important influence on it. And I don't think, in fact, I'm persuaded that it hasn't decided yet. It's too early to decide. But if we get down this road in the next year or two, that will be a big decision for the Russians. I, like every American, I have no hesitancy in giving advice to other governments. But mine to Russia is, despite your worry about American presence in Central Asia, which you have a worry about that for a variety of reasons, I think this would be in your interest to prevent the Taliban from retaking the country. So that's that. And then finally, The Taliban in Afghanistan and the Taliban in Pakistan, they're, of course, all Pashtun, 98% Pashtun. They collaborate with one another. The Afghan Taliban do not fight in Pakistan. But the Pakistan Taliban do fight in Afghanistan. Not great numbers of them, but they do. But their missions are quite different. The Afghan Taliban seeks to expel the Americans and, I believe, reconquer the country. The Pakistan Taliban seeks to overthrow the Pakistan government. And those are different missions and conducted more or less separately. And then the last question, I think, is, well, why would Kabul fall so fast? And I think it's because, one has to be careful about historical analogies, but when armies collapse, they collapse in a hurry. And I give you many examples of that. By the way, the Najibullah is not an example of that, but I can give you examples of that. And at least this is what Afghans tell me. That without the Americans as the spine, even a smaller number, the spine to give them courage to fight, to provide air power, for example. And again, there are military people here. If we withdraw from Afghanistan, where do our aircraft take off from? Where are those drones based? Certainly not in India, because the Indians wouldn't maybe take them, but you can imagine the effect. So I think if we go, we'll see. It's a laboratory experiment. Maybe it would be different. But the people who know the Afghan army well think that it will be many, many, many years. I think you know that today the Afghan army has a percentage of Southern Pashtun in it of 3%. How many Southern Pashtun are in the Afghan army? So, for example, when they go down to the Pashtun villages, they don't speak the language. Right? So I just think they won't stand up. I don't know whether it'll be a week, but it'll be quick. And I think then Russia, in that circumstance, will have to figure out what it does in that circumstance. I think at that time it's too late to try to create a Northern Alliance that late in the game, and then you live with those Taliban jihadis just next door. Well, thank you. As I say, terrific questions. We'll go outside and you can tell me the 100 ways I was wrong, but I think the questions got at all the fundamental questions and issues that one has to take into account to try to think about this. And it's a terrible problem. I'm now just speaking for the Americans, and I think a real challenge for the Russians to think about what to do this, since, as you were saying, Alexander, it's going to affect whatever happens. It's going to have a major effect on Russia, whatever happens, either for good or bad. And thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Robert. I'd like to thank all the participants. I'd like to thank our speaker. We will continue informally with light refreshments through those doors to the back. And this topic will remain on our agenda for years and years to come. I hope to see Mr. Blackwell here again. Maybe we'll talk about what the results of the implementation of Plan B have been 4 years from now. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Thank you.